This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. We're following up this morning on the debate over the Obama administration's so-called czars. Those presidential advisors oversee issues ranging from Afghanistan to the auto industry. Policy czars are not new. Both President Bush and his father used them for everything from drugs to the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Their proliferation in President Obama's administration has drawn criticism. NPR's Audie Cornish reports that Congress is asking if we've gone a czar too far.
First, understand that no one in the administration actually holds the title of czar. It's media jargon, handy for condensing titles like Director of the White House Office of Energy and Climate Change Policy into a tidy term like Energy Czar. The label appears to have popped up as early as the 1830s, with President Andrew Jackson hurling the epithet against what he considered a power-hungry head of the Bank of the United States. Critics today use it roughly the same way.
Look at the power that we've handed out to these unelected, unconfirmed people. They don't answer to anyone.
That's Fox News political commentator Glenn Beck. Beck spearheaded a campaign investigating the background of the Obama administration's green jobs czar, Van Jones, that led the appointee to resign. The incident sparked questions from both sides of the aisle about the vetting and accountability of policy czars. Wisconsin Democrat Russ Feingold chaired a Senate hearing on the issue yesterday.
While there is a long history of the use of White House advisors and czars, that does not mean we can assume they are constitutionally appropriate. But often constitutional problems creep up slowly.
White House officials declined to attend, but presidential counsel Greg Craig sent a letter making a case for the cadre of advisors. First, Craig says several of the czar jobs were established long before Obama, like the directors for national intelligence or drug policy. Others were appointed by or answered directly to Senate-confirmed cabinet heads, not the president. But most importantly, Craig writes, the advisors who report to the White House are simply advisors. Nothing more, nothing less. And historian Bradley Patterson agrees.
White House staff members have no legal responsibility other than to assist and advise the president.
He's a former White House aide who's served in several presidential administrations, including Presidents Eisenhower, Nixon, and Ford. Patterson says these advisors may have the president's ear, but they don't have the ability to enforce laws or control budgets. And he says they don't have to be approved by Congress.
It would be unthinkable that law clerks of the Supreme Court should be in any way accountable to the president or to Congress. It would be unthinkable that the appointments of any of the personal legislative or committee staff here at the Capitol should be approved by the White House. The independence of these three groups of staff is indispensable to the separation of powers.
But Matt Spaulding of the Heritage Foundation think tank disagrees, saying that the role of Obama's policy czars hasn't been so clear-cut. He points to the policy advisors on executive pay and climate change as czars whose authorities seem murky.
If a agent of the president is actually doing things that go to the extent of seeming to step on an officer that has been approved by Congress, that strikes me as potentially raising a serious issue.
As for what Congress can do about it, witnesses suggested everything from defunding White House czar offices to exacting promises from future cabinet heads that policy czars be allowed to testify before Congress. For now, there are only more hearings to come, and no quick action is expected. Audie Cornish, NPR News, The Capitol.